Good Friday morning and welcome to the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. This week, our focus on the legislatures of Virginia and Maryland, which gaveled into session this week. Our guest, the chairman of the Virginia Democratic Party, Brian Moran, is in the studio, along with Prince William County Republican Delegate Bob Marshall joining us on the phone. WTOP's Hank Silverberg is with us as well. From Maryland, Montgomery County Democrat Delegate Lou Simmons and Republican Senator Chris Schenck will join us. And we won't leave out the district this hour. Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che will be here as well. Lots to discuss. We'll be getting to some of your phone calls as well at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can also send in questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag PoliticsProgram. Now, WTOP's Mark Plotkin.
We're very honored and flattered that we have the former, besides the chairman of the Democratic Party, the former head of the Democratic Caucus, a 12-year veteran of the legislature who has now gone on to other things. But Delegate Marshall, I want to start with you. I said yesterday that I would eat this microphone if you beat George Allen in a Republican primary. Prove me wrong. Tell me how you can beat George Allen, who has millions of dollars, who has 100% name recognition. And I know you feel, and I want you to talk about it, that at the convention you literally got more votes than Jim Gilmore, and you should have been the nominee in 2008. They stole that election from you, didn't they?
Well, when you're allowed, you're not allowed, but in fact what happened was there were individuals who were registered on the same day as the convention, and that should not have been allowed. Additionally, I had people who were disqualified who were properly registered, even according to Jim Gilmore supporters. So the outcome probably would have been different, and one lady from Carroll County who was supposed to vote for me flipped and voted for Jim Gilmore, but that's in the past. And
you were very gracious, but I just wanted to get that on the record. Now tell me about today. How can you beat George Allen?
The first question that anybody asks is, can candidate X beat Tim Kaine? Well, I have a record of beating him already in the public arena. Now, what is that record? Number one, he was the chief cheerleader for Obamacare. I am the author.
I have to interrupt you, Delegate Marshall. We can't get to that till you beat George Allen. Please answer that question. I'll be glad to ask you how you can beat Tim Kaine once you're the nominee. But I want to know how you become the nominee. Hello?
Then I simply have to out-organize George Allen.
And do you have, can you do that? Maybe in a convention you could do it, but how do you do it in a primary?
I've been going around the state of Virginia for the last 2 years. I've got support in every congressional district, people who've committed to work for me to collect signatures, to work in the primaries. But again, the question comes back, can you beat Tim Kaine?
All right, let's go to Brian Moran, who's the chairman of the party. Can George Allen or Bob Marshall beat Tim Kaine?
No, but we certainly welcome Bob to the race. Good morning, Bob.
Brian, listen, I miss taking pictures of you.
Delegate Marshall certainly would contribute to the debate on the Republican side and the future of the Republican Party of Virginia. And so whether or not he can beat George Allen or not, I think it demonstrates the fact that there are a lot of folks in the Republican Party who are not enamored with the George Allen candidacy.
Hank Silverberg wants to say something.
Sure. Delegate Marshall, I got to ask you. You launched your campaign for the Senate on the same day H.R. 1 became official in terms of being introduced. That's probably one of the most controversial bills that's been introduced in the Virginia General Assembly in 20 years. Okay, this is basically a personhood bill. How do you correlate that with running for statewide office?
All right, Delegate Marshall, ponder that, and we will come back to you very shortly.
It's the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. Our focus this week on the Virginia and Maryland General Assemblies, discussing Virginia right now. In the studio with us, the chairman of the State Democratic Party, Brian Moran. On the phone, Prince William County Republican Delegate Bob Marshall. Also joining the discussion is WTOP's Hank Silverberg. Much more in this broadcast to come, including Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che from the district, from Maryland, Montgomery County Democrat Delegate Lou Simmons, and Republican Senator Chris Schenck from Maryland will be here as well. Once again, WTOP's Mark Plotkin.
Delegate Marshall, Hank Silverberg, our ace reporter in Virginia, asked you a question about what is Brian Moran properly corrected him off mic. HB1, what's going on there?
Number one, I have to thank Brian Moran 3 years after the fact. He helped me get a vote on a similar bill when Republican leaders didn't want to do this a couple years ago, and that was very gracious of him, so everybody goes on record, so I thank him for that. Number two, the language that I've used here is identical to that which has been on the books in Missouri for 25 years. It was sustained by the U.S. Supreme Court as an expression of their public policy. Out there, it has one purpose and one purpose only. It allows a tort suit for the wrongful death of an unborn child before birth. It's not a criminal statute. It has no effect on the practice of abortion. It just says before birth, the human being is there and should be recognized. We tell third graders this same fact.
All right, let me stop and get Brian Moran's reaction. Some have said, including people who know the innards of this bill, and say this will outlaw abortion in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Is that true, Brian Moran?
It's a personhood bill that would provide rights to the unborn, and it's extremely controversial because it states that life begins at conception.
If you were a delegate, would you vote for this bill?
No, I would oppose it vehemently. And Bob references, I guess, was it 3 years ago, Bob? But even the Republicans
right.
didn't want to give Bob Marshall a vote on this
bill.
So did
you do this to embarrass Bob Marshall?
No. I voted against the bill, and Bob knows that at the time I helped him that I would vote against it. But at the same time, since it was on the floor of the House of Delegates, it was appropriate to be voted on. I think the House Republicans were not treating Bob fairly, and in interest of fairness, they should have voted on the bill.
All right. Hank Silverberg.
It's a very controversial bill, though, and I welcome Bob to describe what he means by conception, because the bill itself does not define conception,
right,
though it says life begins at conception, but then it's absent in terms of defining what conception means, because that will affect, this is an important issue.
This is an important issue, but we have to cover a lot of things.
Sure, go on.
Hank Silverberg, why don't you ask, if you don't mind, direct Delegate Marshall and former Delegate Moran to talk about the legislative session and some other issues, please.
Well, let's just talk about this whole idea of getting something for a floor vote. Things are going to be dramatically changed. In the House, many bills have come and passed in the House, and then last year and previous years when the Senate was controlled by the Democrats, they just died because they died in committee. Now, after what happened earlier this week, the Republicans will have control of all the committees in the Senate. Okay, bills that have died in the past will now get floor votes. It makes it very, very, very much easier for the Republican agenda to actually get a vote. Doesn't necessarily mean it's all going to get passed.
All right, does that mean, Bob Marshall, that everything, since you control both houses, really, that anything you ask for, you'll get?
No, the local government committee in the Senate, I think, has 10 Democrats and 5 Republicans.
So what do you want? What don't you think you'll be able to get that you would like to get besides this bill? You have a Republican governor, a Republican attorney general, a Republican lieutenant governor who controls the Senate, breaks ties, I mean. What won't you get?
And Bob, this personhood bill would not go to the local government committee.
No, but I'm saying, Hank was saying Republicans control it. That may be the case, but they've not structured the committees so that Republicans have majorities in all the committees.
Let's just take the redistricting bill. Okay. Passed by the House already, okay, on the third day. All right. Didn't go anywhere in the Senate because they didn't like the makeup. Now it's going to go to the Senate in basic form, and if the Republicans want, they can push it through really, really easy. That sets congressional districts for 10 years.
Let me say something topical. We were supposed to have the chairman, the counterpart to Brian Moran, Pat Mullins, on. Do you feel, in terms of the Republican presidential primary, that all the candidates should be allowed on the ballot because of the questions that if somebody was an out-of-state person, they couldn't circulate petitions?
Well, that's a constitutional question that, you know, somebody's going to have to answer this at this point. I really don't like changing the rules in midstream.
Are you for a particular presidential candidate, Delegate Marshall?
I signed the petitions for 3 of them. 2 of them, are still...
Well, that was very ecumenical, but I didn't ask you that. I asked you, do you have a preference? Who are you going to vote for in the Virginia presidential Republican primary?
If it's between Ron Paul and, Governor Romney, I will vote for Ron Paul.
All right, how about if the other candidates get on the ballot? Will you still vote for Ron Paul?
That's a hypothetical that I don't know that I would be, able to deal with at this point. In other words, we don't have a court decision.
All right.
Bob, I would think with your political persuasion, you would be supportive of Rick Santorum. Is that not?
Well, I didn't get his petition. I would have signed it. But you're right, Brian. There's certain sympathies there.
Okay. We're going to come back quickly.
Friday morning means the politics program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin as we discuss the Virginia General Assembly session now. More on the Maryland Assembly coming up in our next half hour, along with D.C. Councilmember Mary Che. Our guests on the broadcast right now, the chairman of the Virginia Democratic Party, Brian Moran, along with Prince William County Republican Delegate Bob Marshall. Also with us, WTOP's Hank Silverberg. Your phone calls are welcome, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
Delegate Moran, former Delegate Moran, presently Chairman Moran, I know you want to bring up another issue.
Well, this morning I read with great interest the Washington Post editorial, and it says that Governor McDonnell is proposing an increase to the gas tax by indexing it. And my initial impression of the governor's budget was one that, boy, where's the bold Bob? I mean, it seems to have been a very much a caretaker budget. Because for 8 years, he had criticized Democratic budgets with Mark Warner, Tim Kaine. While I embraced him, he opposed them each and every turn. So when he was governor and with his first two-year budget, I was expecting more transformational change and a bolder vision for Virginia. Haven't seen it, but until this morning, I read the Washington Post. Now, I'm checking with my sources in the General Assembly and trying to track this down. But that would be a game changer. I mean, Nixon could go to China. Only Bob McDonnell can raise revenue for transportation needs. We have $1 billion of transportation needs.
Let's ask Delegate Marshall, are you in agreement with the governor in this newfound zeal for transportation funding? Would you go along with this?
I have not seen that. His original proposal, I thought, was to increase the amount of the sales tax, which would go back to transportation. So I've not seen this other thing. I don't see how he could do that without at some point, you know, getting a problem with looking like he's increasing taxes, which it sure would look like.
And the proposal that Delegate Marshall mentions is one that we're going to oppose, because that sales tax revenue now goes to education, and Democrats are going to show a similar zeal to protect K-12 education.
Before I go to our esteemed Virginia reporter, Hank Silverberg, this thought came into my mind. Bill Bowling and Ken Cuccinelli are going to run for governor. You're not running for that position, as I know today. You're running for the Senate. Who would you support in that primary or convention?
I want them both to woo me.
Great line. Go ahead, Hank.
Well, I was just going to say the interesting thing about the gas tax is that every time it's come up in the past, it's gone nowhere. It hasn't been raised since 1986.
1986, Governor Belisle's, 17.5 cents. And, of course, 17.5 cents does not buy today what it bought in 1986, and that's the problem with our transportation trust fund.
Most of that money that's being shifted in the sales tax from education and elsewhere is going to maintenance of transportation. They're talking about just repaving and fixing what we have. There's very little money for new construction.
Yeah, the rap on the Republicans, Delegate Marshall, Senate candidate Marshall, I'm trying to elevate your prominence as much as I can, is that you don't really provide significant, meaningful money for transportation. What is your generic answer to that question?
The generic answer is I have supported tolls both on I-95 and I-81. I introduced a bill, which I think Brian supported several years ago, that allows locality to build toll facilities, toll roads, like from Prince William to Fairfax to Loudoun. If you do that, you're not directly getting into the tax business, but the people who use the road pay for the road. So that's economic justice, and it also, you know, pays for the facility.
I'm trying to be as eclectic as I can in this segment. Virginia is a battleground state in the presidential. For the first time since 1964, Democrats won it. Democrats feel that Republicans such as yourself, with majorities in the state legislature, are going to try to shrink the Democratic vote by pushing. Do you have voter ID in Virginia? That is, you have to produce an ID to vote?
Not a picture ID. Delegate Moran, former Delegate Moran, stating we don't have to show a picture like South Carolina is now
are
arguing.
You
Department
a...
of Justice has opposed that, but we do have a voter ID.
Well, yes, a voter ID, but a picture ID, which is the controversy issue.
Correct.
Delegate Marshall, do you insist or would you vote for legislation that makes a photo ID mandatory?
Yes, I did, but you'd always have to have a backup to allow a provisional ballot to be cast. I introduced a bill this time that in the future requires people to show proof of citizenship for getting a voter card.
One of the problems with photo ID, there are, believe it or not, and some people are going to have to find this hard to believe, there are people who don't have a photo ID. Mm-hmm. They don't have a driver's license because they don't drive. They don't have one of those special ID cards because they don't find any. They simply don't have it. And if you create a photo ID, those people are going to have trouble voting.
Doug Marshall, wouldn't you be for the state providing a photo ID at no cost? That is, that would to charge them would be a form of a poll tax.
Well, if you can't afford it and you're just going for voter purposes, yes, I think that should be done.
All right.
But why establish such an impediment to voting? I mean, Virginia, frankly, has a sad history in this regard and something that we should be aware of. And it's a fundamental right and absolutely essential to our functioning democracy. I don't understand why folks are trying to impede and establish impediments to that fundamental right.
Well, Brian,
there hasn't been abuse demonstrated. Until you show rampant fraud and abuse, I just do not see any additional...
Well, let's be more current. Is there going to be legislation introduced by the Republican majority in both houses that provides for photo ID mandatory that will be applied to this November presidential election? Please inform me.
I don't think you could get it done that fast.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Delegate Marshall, Senate Candidate Marshall, Chairman Moran, and Hank Silverberg, who is welcome to stay for the entire program if he would like, who drove in. Really appreciate it very much. And we're now going to move quickly to D.C. and then our distinguished delegate from Maryland, Delegate Simmons, and State Senator Chris Shank from Washington County in Maryland.
We're back on the politics program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin as our focus shifts to the district and to Maryland. Joining us in the studio is Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che. Also from Maryland, Montgomery County Democratic Delegate Lou Simmons and Republican State Senator Chris Shank is with us on the phone. Your phone calls are welcome as we continue at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can send in questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag politicsprogram. Once again, Mark Plotkin.
We're very glad to have the council member who represents the ward in which the station resides, and my council member, Councilmember Mary Che, thank you, who also happens to be the council chair pro temp. What does that mean?
Well, it means when the council chair is unavailable, I act in his stead.
Okay. Now, I'm going to be unpleasant and impertinent right at the beginning. If the chairman of the city council, Kwame Brown, who is under investigation and has not been charged with anything, and there is a presumption of innocence, I'm not being facetious, I'm being serious, should be indicted, the same situation that Councilmember Harry Thomas, what is your position if that should occur? Should he resign if he's indicted? I don't want him to be indicted, but I have to discuss the possibilities. And since you have a very important position, if that should happen, what would be your point of view?
Well, the position of the chair pro tem is to act, as I said, in the stead of the chairman if the chairman's unavailable. But if the chairman should resign or otherwise...
No, I didn't ask that question, Mary. If the chair should not resign but should be indicted, you said that Harry Thomas, upon indictment, he pled. But if Kwame Brown is just indicted, should he resign?
Well, again, I want to back up a little bit. With respect to Harry Thomas, there was a civil action brought against him by the Attorney General, which had very detailed allegations about what he had done. Not full, because we found out more with the U.S. Attorney. But then Harry Thomas agreed. He said he didn't do it. He wouldn't admit to any wrongdoing, but he agreed to pay back the $300,000. Now, to me, that was an admission of guilt.
Okay.
And as a result of that, months ago, I asked for his resignation. if you're talking about indictments, and I do want to talk generally because, you know, you get a certain momentum if you start talking about indictments with respect to a particular person, and there's a slight unfairness, I think, about that. But an indictment would have to come from a grand jury. What was happening with
criminal information?
Well, but criminal information is important.
I don't want to get bogged down to this.
Okay.
All right.
It is important, Mark, because if you have a criminal information filed, it means that it's with the consent of the person,
right,
which means that a plea deal is
imminent. A criminal information should be filed against Kwame Brown, would you call for his resignation?
If that were the case and the nature of the charges were such that they were equivalent, yes.
All right. But if he was indicted, which a grand jury, and he said, I'm innocent, I'm going to trial, what would be your position then?
Well, I think it's terribly unfair to present this as a hypothetical.
No, I don't think it's unfair because this has happened, and I want to know your disposition toward this.
Well, you know, you're making me answer a hypothetical that, the suggestion inevitably behind it is an implication that this is in the offing. And I want to make very, very clear.
No, I haven't said that.
Nowhere,
that is not my implication at all.
We're nowhere near that. But on the other hand, yes. I mean, and it would be true of any council member.
Well, you're a lawyer, Lou Simmons. You defend in your professional life, but you're also an elected official. If somebody is indicted in the Maryland House of Delegates, what is your posture toward that person in terms of continuing to hold office?
Well, I can only tell you what happened with Senator Curry, who, in fact, was indicted and was the chairman of the Senate Budget and Tax. And he did step aside as chairman during the period of the indictment, which everyone thought was appropriate, I think, including Senator Curry, who was ultimately acquitted of the criminal charges. So if it was up to me, and it's not up to me, I would say that if someone is indicted, they should at least step aside. I'm not saying resign their office, but step aside from a chairmanship or something of the like until the charges are resolved. And that would seem to be a fair balance, allowing for the presumption of innocence.
Let me go to another matter. I read today where the council is planning, and everybody knows I'm a statehood advocate, to go to all 50 states to lobby for statehood. I think this is misdirected. That is, none of the state legislatures, and that's why we have the benefit of Delegate Simmons here, when it was a constitutional amendment, which requires 38 states to ratify after two-thirds vote, that was for representation. Statehood and the Office of Legal Counsel and the Justice Department says it can be done by simple majority. Shouldn't the efforts be not to go to all 50 states, but to go up to Capitol Hill and start lobbying for statehood there?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. In other words, if you have the support behind you of state legislatures, I think it gives a push to the lobby on Capitol Hill. Because, if the states are behind us, ultimately, though, if there were any amendment, it would have to be approved by three-quarters of the states. So why not lay the groundwork for that approval?
Delegate Simmons, can we have the benefit of when you voted for D.C. voting rights, what is the disposition you're six Democratic House members, two Democratic senators. It's kind of a moot question, but do you feel that this would be a waste of effort or they should direct their efforts, since you're a proponent of this, strictly to the U.S. Congress?
Well, I don't think that the two are mutually exclusive. Of course, back in 1979, I was one of three Republicans, Connie Morella and the late Burt Booth from Baltimore County, may she rest in peace, who voted for D.C. voting rights. And it barely succeeded in the Maryland General Assembly and obviously failed. But I think it might be worth going back that route. The fact that it failed once, I think the nation has changed. Views have evolved in a number of ways. And I think that, and this is just my perhaps uninformed opinion, that the people feel that the people of the District of Columbia deserve voting rights and should have it.
Hank Silverberg is going to speak after we come back. And Mary Che, this is very limited, but you were brilliant in the time that you were here.
Here on the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin, our guests, Montgomery County Delegate Lou Simmons, Republican State Senator Chris Shank is joining us now. WTOP's Hank Silverberg is along with us, and we'll be taking your phone calls as well. 877-336-1035 is our number. 877-336-1035.
State Senator Shank, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your patience. I have a question. How many senators do you have in your body?
47.
And how many Republicans?
12.
And how do you ever get anything done, or how do you in any way get your views listened to or heard to with so overwhelming majorities?
Well, I think it's the role of the loyal opposition, Mark, and thanks for having me on to talk about that. Sometimes I've been doing this for 13 years now. This is this will be my 14th session coming up, and it gets frustrating sometimes. But I think we have a responsibility to the 42% of the state of Maryland voters who expressed a different preference in this last election to compete in the marketplace of ideas. And, you know, in, at least in the Senate and most times in the House, we have the ability to proffer our own ideas, to offer amendments, unlimited debate until a filibuster cloture vote is called. And I think it is our responsibility when we see something that...
All right, Senator, let's be specific. The sales tax, which the governor seems to be kind of murky on, raising it a penny. I'm going to ask Delegate Simmons, who shares his party affiliation, do you have the votes if he should propose to raise it one penny from 6 cents to 7 cents to defeat it?
You're asking me from
yes.
the House or something. I the Senate president has already said that's a non-starter, at least in the Senate. It came out of left field. I think that there would be universal opposition from the Senate caucus, and I think a good number of Democrats would oppose that, particularly when you're seeing the Senate president arguing against it already.
Delegate Simmons, the erudite and always conscientious who's served in many generations, interrupted. How do you feel about what the governor at least floated, and what would you do if it became actually a serious proposal?
Well, I agree with Senator Schenck that there is not an appetite in either body right now to raise the sales tax. We just raised the alcohol tax last year. We raised the sales tax as part of the governor's package a few years ago. At this point, the governor kind of tossed this out, and I don't think anyone was really prepared for it. If I had to bet on it, I would say it would be, as Senator Schenck has said, a non-starter
right.
this year.
You're a major proponent against any form of gambling, and I quoted you when I was up in the legislature. You have said that the governor's stance on gambling, expanding gambling to table games and to more sites, is, and I repeat your words, O'Malley's folly.
Sure.
Would you elaborate on that?
Well, to be succinct about it, the governor, when he forecast the revenues that we were supposed to receive, talked about $600 million, $700 million, $800 million. We haven't received a fraction of that. One of the reasons is that this was oversold. The gambling dollar stretches only so far. We have gambling now in West Virginia, in Delaware, in Pennsylvania, in Maryland. In addition to which, we're taking up to $100 million a year that we receive and subsidizing the past. We're giving it away every year, and we will give it away every year to the horse racing business. This is flushing money down a rat hole. I do not believe that expanding gambling into Prince George's County or other venues is going to do anything but create more pathological gamblers. What the governor has failed to do quite conspicuously and quite deliberately is to fail to tell the public about the social and economic costs of gambling, which many studies have revealed. They're indirect costs, they're hidden costs, but they offset the amount of money you receive. Now, it's water under the bridge. The public has voted for slots, but I think that slots is a dishonest way of raising money. It exploits often the poor, the working class, and there are more forthright, transparent ways to raise money.
Senator Schenck, how do you feel about this whole issue, and do you think there are the votes to expand gambling?
Well, interestingly enough, I don't entirely disagree with Delegate Simmons. Many of the points that he just raised, I have actually voted with him on and argued similar points. Not entirely agree. I voted against the slots referendum because I think the implementation of it, as Lou just indicated, was poorly done. There was a better, more transparent way of doing it as far as picking sites, managing the splits of the revenue. Like him, I'm not in favor of subsidizing jeopardizing the horse racing industry. But as Lou just said, that we have crossed the Rubicon and we now have slots. I do not necessarily have the same opposition to expanding gaming in other parts of the state. Certainly, we'll keep an open mind.
How about table games?
Yeah, here's the thing. Table games, I think, make casinos more competitive. We have, quite frankly, totally screwed this thing up. Table games are already being offered across the river in my district over in Charlestown. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars of new capital construction. They've employed people, and it has not necessarily been the...
All right, Senator, we have to pause. We'll come back to you, and Hank Silverberg will be able to ask some questions to both of you.
The conversation is on issues before the Maryland General Assembly. This is the Politics Program with WTOP's Mark Plotkin. Montgomery County Delegate Lou Simmons is with us, and State Senator Chris Schenck is with us on the phone as well, along with WTOP's Hank Silverberg. If you have a comment or a question for us, time to call now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
I was just wondering, as you well know, the... trend in transportation right now is to toll everything. We have the ICC just opened in Maryland. We were discussing earlier about Virginia. Virginia has these hot lanes that are going to kind of come and they're going to kind of die at the Maryland border. And people are going to cross that American Legion Bridge and it's going to all bunch up there. Has there been any discussion at all about putting any kind of tolls on the Maryland side of the Beltway to kind of flow the traffic and to bring in additional revenue?
I am not aware, and maybe Chris knows something that I don't, but if I could, you raise a very important point about transportation and revenues in Maryland, and if I could, the governor has certainly suggested, and the president of the Senate has endorsed, raising the gas tax. That's what I think is the most talked about source of...
How much of a raise?
Well, the governor's commission... suggested 15 cents over a three-year period. I don't support that at this point.
What do you support?
I would support a modest rise in the gas tax.
What's modest?
5 cents. However, and this is very important, Mark, the point I was trying to make, if we pass a constitutional amendment that creates a lockbox that says that the money that is raised for transportation cannot be raided and used for other purposes, it'll be used to repair bridges and roads and for mass transit. One of the most serious problems, and I hope Chris and I would agree on this over the years, has been that the Transportation Trust Fund and other funds have been raided and used to balance the budget. Whenever we claim we balance the budget, it's because we've drained that fund. I am not going to support a rise in the gas tax unless the money is dedicated to the purposes that we tell the people that they're paying it for.
Well, State Senator Schenck, Republican from Washington County, would you vote for a raising of the gas tax? And what about Delegate Simmons' suggestion about if there should be a raise, this lockbox concept?
Absolutely not. Would certainly not support any type of increase in the gas.
None. Zero.
None. And I'll tell you why. I think Lou and I are in violent agreement as far as the Transportation Trust Fund, and it has been raided, and I will concede, by Republicans and Democrats, and it's a long tradition of it. The other objection that I have, representing a rural suburban county, Washington County, to the west of the district, is that so much of the funds are being allocated for mass transit, wherein my constituents who don't use mass transit nearly to that extent are subsidizing that. And if you allow the funds that are being generated by the gas tax to pay for roads, there would be ample amount of money in the Transportation Trust Fund. And I don't think that yet another tax increase at this point in time that would ripple negatively throughout our economy is a good idea.
Let me move to a very controversial issue. The governor is going to push. It failed by 6 votes in the House. It needs about 6 votes. The state Senate voted for it. Same-sex marriage. Where are you on that, State Senator Schenck? And then we'll go to Delegate Simmons.
Mm-hmm. Opposed, and will continue to oppose it. But you were correct in saying that the Senate has voted for it and is probably likely to vote for it again. I think the interesting thing about marriage this year is going to be to what extent the House takes it up, and the whole issue of religious liberty, and do we provide exemptions for people people of conscience who don't recognize this type of marriage because of their religious convictions. And how the House and Senate take that issue up, I think, will go a long way in terms of shaping the debate for what is no doubt going to be a referendum campaign and ultimately decided by the citizens of Maryland.
Delegate Simmons, I think many people question the ardor of the governor. And that some have said that he's doing this because of his presidential ambitions, that Governor Cuomo, who he sees as a possible rival in 2016, has pushed for that. Why don't you speak to that?
Well, first, just to be clear, I'm an ardent supporter of same-sex marriage. I appreciate the reservations that some have, but I believe it is a fundamental civil rights issue, and many conservatives have also supported same-sex marriage. The governor's ardor, as you refer to it, seems to have heated up a bit. When I first came to the General Assembly and after he was elected governor, I do not believe he took a position on same-sex marriage, nor do I believe he sent his administration down to testify on other bills affecting same-sex marriage. But right now, this vote is going to shape up as a test of the governor's political clout. If he succeeds in rounding up the last few votes we need to put same-sex marriage over the top, his reputation nationally is going to be enhanced. If he fails, it's going to be diminished.
Will it pass in the House?
At this point, I would say the votes are not there. I'm on the House Judiciary Committee. Before it went to the floor last year, I could not see where the votes were. Others told me they were there, but I didn't see them. We still don't know where the votes are. But if the governor puts his shoulder to the wheel and he says that he will, it should pass.
Quick question, Hank Silverberg.
Well, observation more than question. I noticed the degree between Western Maryland and the Washington suburbs on transportation is very similar to what's going on in Virginia between the southern part of the state and the northern part of the state, arguing roads versus mass transit. It's the identical argument, and it's very interesting for me.
That's the final thought. This has been a very wide-ranging discussion. Thank you, Delegate Simmons. Thank you, Senator Schenck, for joining us. We hope to see you in person one time.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.